Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Wow, what a weekend. And just to fill you in, if you somehow missed out on it, when we went off the air Friday night, I found out about something that another liberal talk program had initiated. I've made some new friends. The Young Turks, who air from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we air 7 to 10 Eastern Standard Time, decided to filibuster for the filibuster. And they went nonstop starting Thursday evening until today. And I was fortunate enough to participate in that. I carried 3 hours of the program for them this morning from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. And it was like an ice cold shot of aquavit. What do they say in Dr. Strangelove? A little cool water on the back of the neck and the code. We started something. Liberal talkers from across the nation participated. Tom Hartman, Peter B. Collins, our good friend Brad Friedman from bradblog.com was in on the fun. Mike Malloy was there from Air America. And, of course, Cenk and Jilly, the Young Turks themselves. What a blast. What an absolute blast. And in large part, the purpose of that undertaking is to a certain extent over now. But in many other ways, it is not. I want to share something with you. We must learn to be equally good at what is short and sharp and what is long and tough. Appearances are often very deceptive, and as Kipling well says, we must, quote, meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same. You cannot tell from appearances how things will go. Sometimes imagination makes things out far worse than they are. Yet without imagination, not much can be done. Those people who are imaginative see many more dangers than perhaps exist. Certainly many more than will happen, but then they must also pray to be given that extra courage to carry this far-reaching imagination. Surely from this period, this is the lesson. Never give in. Never give in. Never in nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming weight of the opposition. Do not let us speak of darker days. Let us speak, rather, of sterner days. These are not dark days. These are great days. The greatest days our country has ever lived. And we must all thank God that we have been allowed, each of us according to our stations, to play a part in making these days memorable in the history of our nation.
We band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be he ne'er so vile, this day shall gentle his condition. And gentlemen now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap, whilst any speaks that fought with us.
This is not the end of the fight. The cloture issue today was not the end of the matter. It was the beginning of the matter. It is obvious now, it is obvious, that the United States will have foisted upon it, barring some kindly transaction from Almighty God, we will have foisted upon us for the next 40 years one of the single most loathsome, hateful, disgusting nominees to the highest court in this land that this country has ever seen. But we won today. Yes, we did. We won. A week ago, there was no possibility whatsoever of a filibuster against this man. He was going to easily and blithely slither onto the Supreme Court bench. That did not happen. The concerted efforts of patriotic, real Americans across this continent and around the world in the last 3 to 4 days forced this issue to a head. The actions of patriotic Americans, real Americans, liberals, progressives, the people who time after time after time have saved this country from the excesses of Tories and conservatives and Republicans. Those actions forced people like Bill Frist to quiver in his hand-tooled Italian boots. They have awakened a sleeping giant, and they know they have, and they are scared. So let us start this evening with a roll call of honor. Let us start this evening by praising those who, when the wheat was winnowed from the chaff, who, when the sheep were separated from the Judas goats, were not found wanting. Let us praise, then, John Kerry of Massachusetts. Let us praise, then, Edward M. Kennedy of Massachusetts. Let us praise Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, Barack Obama of Illinois, Charles Schumer of New York. Let us praise Hillary Clinton of New York. Let us praise Harry Reid of Nevada, and Barbara Boxer of California, and Dianne Feinstein of California, and even Joe Biden. One vote Joe Biden of Delaware stood to be counted when that time had come. Let us praise Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey, as well as brand new Senator Menendez of New Jersey. Let us give them great praise. For when the time arose and greatness called to them, they did not shrink from the call. They answered it and said, "I'm here." Conversely, here is the list of Judas goats. Here is the list of the chaff. Akaka, Hawaii. Baucus, Montana. Bingaman, New Mexico. Byrd, West Virginia. Cantwell, Washington. Dorgan of the Dakotas, Inouye of Hawaii, Cole of Wisconsin, Landrieu of Louisiana, Lieberman, oh God, Lieberman of Connecticut, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Bill Nelson of Florida, Pryor, David Pryor of Arkansas, shame upon shame, John D. Rockefeller the Fourth of West Virginia, and Salazar of Colorado. I will leave the opinions of other people to their own senators, but I say tonight to Robert Byrd and John D. Rockefeller that I am a hell of a lot more than of a Democrat than you, sirs, will ever be. Ever. I know what democratic values are. You, sirs, do not. John D. Rockefeller IV, Robert C. Byrd, you are dead to me. You are dead to me. Do not send me another solicitation for a donation, because I will send it back, and you do not want to read what will be written on it. I will not vote for you. I do not have to vote for your opponent, but I will not vote for you. I will not. For when the time came for you, Robert Byrd, to stand up for that Constitution you're constantly waving about, you, sir, ran and hid. You hid behind the cassocks and the skirts of the religion industry. You, sir, Robert Byrd, are an abject coward. And I will not number you among my party. Fair enough. I think so. Your comments, of course, are always welcome. The phone number you already know, most likely. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, but I just thought it was so... I thought
God.
It was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway... Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs. I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering. Pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Minutes past the hour here at Head On, our secure, undisclosed location in the hills and hollers of wonderful West Virginia. I'm Bob Kincaid. My lovely wife, Agnes, is at the controls. Some thoughts I thought I would share with you. With regard to that great guardian of the Constitution, Senator Robert Byrd. Now, Senator Byrd has been said to be literally the guardian of the Constitution. He was our last defense against the barbarians at the gates. But when he was weighed today, he was found wanting. I want to share with you some thoughts from a listener to the show, our friend Hubert. Now, Hubert posted this in the West Virginia Forum on Democratic Underground, and I quote, "If Byrd was so damned worried about Alito's old lady crying, he should look at how many people are crying for their children killed in Bush's elective war in Iraq. Alito wants to give Bush absolute power. Anyone who votes for people like that should be kicked out of Congress, and history should treat them like the fools that they are." We've mentioned recently on the program that particular Bible verse. What does it say? I would that you were hot or cold, but you are lukewarm and you shall be spit out. Today, John Rockefeller and Robert Byrd were spit out. And heartbreak. Daniel Inouye, an honest-to-God, genuine World War II hero who suffered through the internment in an American concentration camp at the beginning of World War II, and should know better, who should know the march of fascism when he sees it, he too was spit out. Akaka was spit out. There is a list of people here that I once thought I could trust, and they have been spit out. Max Baucus, spit out. Jeff Bingaman, spit out. Maria Cantwell, spit out. Byron Dorgan, spit out. Cole, spit out. Mary Landrieu, spit out. Joseph Lieberman, spit out. Blanche Lincoln, spit out. Ben Nelson, spit out. Bill Nelson, lick spittle, spit out. Pryor, Arkansas, spit out. Salazar, Colorado, spit out. Now, I'm seeing some discussion, and perhaps it is a mark of frustration. I'm seeing and hearing some discussion that that somehow maybe it means it's time for the progressives to just leave the Democratic Party and go over and be all green and stuff. Nothing could be a greater mistake. Nothing could be a greater mistake. Nothing could be a greater mistake. We cannot abandon this party to the Cantwells and the Pryors and the Rockefellers and the Byrds. We cannot do it. What we have to do a better job of engaging the Greens. Here in West Virginia, the Mountain Party, we must bring them into the fold of the Democratic Party so that they can help us effect change. Because twiddling their thumbs in a corner will not do it, and that is what they are engaged in right now. We must engage them in changing the Democratic Party. And of course, I couldn't help but think of the Jack Abramoff scandal when I realized, to my horror, that Robert Byrd had taken $830,000 of Move On PAC money. Now that he, you know, this was all in the way of attempting to scare Shelley Moore Capito out of the race against Byrd. You know, arching a bad wig, Shelley. And it amazes me when I think that Move On raised $830,000 for Robert Byrd and gladly gave it to him. We're not Republicans. We weren't trying to vote by. But Byrd, who probably doesn't know what Move On, Move Out, or Move Over is. Well, Senator Byrd was glad to have their money. And the thing that galls me most out of this, the Move On money, these weren't chuckle checks written by millionaires for $1,000 at a pop. Oh, you want a little money, son? Here, let me write you $1,000 check. That's not what this was. This was some liberals, movie money for the weekend. $10-$20 at a time. These were the hard-earned dollars of real middle-class working Americans. Like I said, they gave up their movie money one week to help Robert Byrd. They chose hamburger over steak one week to help Robert Byrd. They paid a little less on top of the minimum monthly amount on their credit card payments to help Robert Byrd. And when the light was shone upon him, Robert Byrd could not be called upon to help them. Now, to a certain extent, the progressives and the liberals in this country may have been fooled by Robert Byrd. It's entirely possible that they were. Because I don't think that anyone who donates to Move On could be said to have supported the Republican bankruptcy bill. Byrd voted for that. I don't think anybody who belongs to Move On or contributes money to them could be thought of as supporting closing the courthouse doors to the victims of corporate and polluter malfeasance by way of class action reform. Byrd voted for that. I don't think that anyone who gave money to MoveOn.org could be thought of as supporting John Roberts for Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Byrd supported that. If you or I went out and took money from another person or another group on the pretext of being something they aren't, we aren't. We, you and I, would be under the jail right now. And we would be charged with obtaining, here in West Virginia, with obtaining goods, money, or services by false pretenses. The shorthand word for that is fraud. and a fraud was perpetrated on MoveOn.org by Robert C. Byrd, and every liberal who gave money to that cause, every progressive who gave money to that cause, needs to contact Byrd's office and demand that he give that $830,000 back to MoveOn.org, because his campaign has that money as a direct and proximate result of active fraud. Okay? Gee, Bob, too bad. You're running... Really? Next November you're going to be running against a millionaire? Well, you still have need to give the $830,000 back that you got by trick. Demand it of him. Call Byrd's office. Where's the number? Here it is. They'll probably actually start answering the phones again now that the cloture vote is over. The Byrd office number in Washington, D.C. is area code 202-224-3954. And I am going to drag this around behind me like a little red wagon. I am going to beat on it like a little tin drum. Byrd, give it back. Give it back. Okay? I like the idea of that. Tell you what, let's take a quick break. When we come back, your calls at 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. Well, I'll tell you what, never mind the break. We weren't ready for it. Let's just go to the phones. Bob is with us, calling from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're Head On.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
I like your little red wagon.
I'm glad somebody does.
How about naming them for what they really are? Slinky,
okay.
Slinky, Slinky, oh, what a marvelous toy. You know, you think about it, all they are is the little slinky things that you used to get as a kid.
Oh, yeah, no spines in them.
Yeah, no spines in them. They just kept flopping down the stairs, just falling over themselves, trying to get down there to, oh, I don't know. But I called them boys this weekend.
Oh, we all did.
Yeah.
Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of phone calls, Bob, went into various and sundry Senate offices.
Oh, yeah. And I told them, grow a spine. You know, get some, you know, just get some spine. And Dorgan, I thought at least Dorgan would have some spine.
Yeah, he sunk the shank in you, Bob.
Oh, yeah, he did. He sunk it in all of us, because he sunk it into Randy. Because he'd been talking to Randy about all his wonderful things he's done for the Democratic Party. Well, you know, yeah, let's take our party back, okay?
Yeah. We don't. We can't run off and join the Greens. We can't run off and chase after Ralph Nader, Bob.
No.
It's our party.
Find other candidates and run them in the primaries everywhere. I mean, find them and put them in the primaries. Even if they can't win, at least they'll let the ones that are in office, though, that were serious about this thing. Let's join hands and arms and stand shoulder to shoulder in this fight, because we ain't going to get a second chance. We've been knocked down too damn many times. But, hey, you know, I've been knocked down a lot.
Got back up, didn't you?
Oh, I always got back up. I got hit by a car one time, threw me 15 feet in the air and over an embankment, and I got up, and the corpsman said, damn, most people don't get up and walk away from that. And I said, I didn't walk. I kind of hobbled.
It crawled a little bit.
Well, I wasn't no crawling. I mean, I actually got up, and, well, I hobbled because I was kind of busted up a bit, but. But the thing is, we have to either get together, and I don't know how we're going to do it. I'm not sure, but you know those boys and girls on that show, I love them. I never heard of them before until you turned me on to them. But what do you call them again?
The Young Turks?
Yeah, the Young Turks. You know, and... God, he looks so dejected tonight. I actually got him tuned in here on the computer. I look at him, and for a while there, he was looking kind of just, whoa, dang, especially when we're doing that count, you know. And all.
Well, they poured their hearts and souls in it. A lot of us did.
Yeah.
Here at Head On, we pretty much tripled their capacity. We tripled their ability to get the filibuster out to the liberal community.
Are these people really Democrats? I've always called. I met Kent Conrad. I met that little punk. And he was always a Dino to me. I told my buddies, I said, hey, that boy ain't no Democrat.
No.
Oh, yeah, he's in our party. And no, he was always one of those, what do you call them?
Go along, get along?
No. He was kind of like a implant.
Oh, yeah.
What do you call them? You know, you take something that ain't
a graft. A graft?
Yeah, you graft it onto the plant, and then you got a different plant. Okay, and it calls itself the plant, but it's not. Okay, it's kind of like you get, they do it with certain apple trees, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it isn't exactly the same thing, but it sucks the life out of what it is attached to.
Yeah, a parasite. It's like a tick.
And that's what he's kind of like a, he's like one of them, these Republicans, they've been working at this since I was a boy, okay? When I was in diapers, these people have been planning it because they could never get their act together. And then they blamed everything on the liberals. Everything that's going wrong with the country is the liberals' fault. But if you look back at the 60s and you see who caused the strife, it wasn't liberal values.
No,
it wasn't. It was this, it's kind of like a, what they call Nixon, a cancer on the presidency.
Yeah.
Hell, he was the cancer. And he was just kind of like, you know, kind of, it's metastasized now. It's actually gotten to the point where one part of this country is going to die. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's either the United States of America or, and I mean that. I mean,
yeah. It's some kind of kingdom or fascist dictatorship. That's where we're headed.
Well, no, we're already there.
Well, yeah, I understand that large part, but the ultimate royal imperial powers of George Bush have not quite yet been conferred upon him. That is Samuel Alito's job, Bob.
You were talking about a cartoon. Was that you who was talking about a cartoon? You laughed the damn hard. It had Bush as the Gollum.
Oh, yeah, that was me.
Yeah, okay. I thought it was.
Yeah, in fact, Bart Cop over at BartCop.com. Reprinted that cartoon in the last day or so.
I do listen to Bart. Bart gets a little risque. Okay.
Yeah, well, he's having fun.
Well, Bart Cop don't have to worry about the FCC either. You know, he's all internet. You buy his program, you listen to it. I've been hooked up with Bart Cop for a while, and Bart and I went a couple rounds. You know?
Yeah.
And that's what I like about fighting them, okay?
Yeah.
When they really get the fight in them, okay? First they bounce ideas off each other, and then they bounce heads off each other, and finally they just, you know, they either get with the program. I mean, you know, they didn't do it overnight back in the 30s and back in the 20s. It's just when the weight got too heavy on the people look or something better than what they were living. It's kind of like being in Iraq right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because this morning I woke up and I turned C-SPAN on like I usually do. And there were a couple young ladies on there. One, they were both twins. I don't know if you saw that or not. You're probably catching up a little breathing room. But, you know, one was a reporter and the other is a English teacher, and one went to Iraq as a reporter, and she worked for the Times, or not the Times, but the Post, Washington Post, and, you know, they have a wedge or something that's separating them now because one was in a combat zone, the other one wasn't. And there's something that broke those two apart, okay? And right now, see, years ago, Republicans and Democrats were brothers.
Well, or at least they could carry on a conversation. That day is gone, Bob.
No, we were brothers. We were brothers of an ideal, okay? Kind of like, who were those two back there, Cain and Abel?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were brothers. One wanted all of God's love and adoration, and he would, you know, and the other one, what did he want?
Power and honor and praise and, yeah.
Yeah. But he wanted more than what was his portion. And he thought that if he only did this one thing, he would get more than his brother. And it was always the one wanting more than the other. And that's where we're at right now. We got one wanting more than the other. And the other one, being the good brother, is trying in all of his righteousness. And I mean that, in righteousness, trying to reach out to his brother. And his brother keeps killing him over and over again. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how Democrats keep extending the olive branch only to draw back a bloody stump, Bob. And it's true. It's what we do. The fact of the matter is, no one seems to, you know, this list of Quislings, this list of Vichy Democrats, Akaka and Baucus and Bingaman and Byrd and Cantwell, Dorgan, Inouye, Cole, Landrieu, all of these people, they don't understand that they are dealing with a bunch of bullies. They have forgotten or possibly never even heard the words of, who was it, Phil Gramm from Texas a few years back, who said, in just a few more years, we're going to be using dogs to hunt down the Democrats.
That's what they got in mind. See, they, you know, okay.
They're
always throwing out this thing on the talk shows, okay? It's always like, why do all these Democrats hate you? You know, they hate you. They hate you. And it's always the hate, but the hate is not coming from our side, Bob.
No, they never talk, Bob, about what it is that engenders our displeasure, why it is that we fear them, why it is that we loathe them, why it is that they break our hearts with what they do to our country. That part never gets mentioned. The other side, as far as the mainstream media is concerned, Bob, the other side is lily white and without sin.
You're wrong, Bob.
No, I'm not saying that they are. I'm saying that's the way they're portrayed.
Yeah, but you're wrong. You're wrong on the idea that excuse me. Oh, goodness. Goodness.
You okay?
I'm a lung. But if you look at where the hatred really comes from, hatred always comes from fear. You hate that which you fear.
Well, sure. Absolutely.
And I'm not afraid of any Republican. I'm not afraid of any Republican ideas because I can lay it out. I mean, you know, kind of sit down and listen to their spiel, and I can start to come up with these intelligent arguments, okay, that belies everything that they say. Every time I can always come up with something that they can't refute. And every time I do, they go back to their talking points and their fear thing and their hatred thing and all that. Well, you hate America. Well, no, I don't hate America. I hate people that hate America, okay?
Sure.
I mean, if you hate the ideals of what this country was founded on, then you hate America. I mean, America is just an idea. It's nothing other than that. It's just an idea.
Right, and well, and so much of that's so very true, Bob, because, for instance, you know, whether it be the First Amendment, the Second, Third, Fourth, Fifth, whatever, those things only continue to exist as long as we believe them in them. Though, you know, when you look at the Bill of Rights, those aren't just statements. Those are the secular articles of faith in our society.
Yep.
And if you cease to believe in them, then the society that the framers put hope to create and put together ceases to exist. These people are constantly, well, you know, we need to give up some of our freedom in order to be safe from the terrorists. Well, it's like being a little bit pregnant. Yes, you can't give up some freedom. It's an all or nothing deal. You are either free or you're not.
That's right. Hey, I love this catchphrase they keep up coming up with. Freedom isn't free.
Yeah, well, they love that one.
So wait a minute. If freedom isn't free, what the hell is? Question. Okay.
Yeah.
Freedom.
That's just
freedom. It's not.
It's just more of their stupid jingoism, Bob.
Yeah, it's the same catchphrase. But I think I sent you one off the other night. I don't know if you caught it or not. You were probably busy doing what you're doing, so you didn't catch it. But you know what the Republican Party is right now?
What's that?
It's the Enron of America Incorporated.
Oh, sure. Everything that we saw in the collapse of Enron was gestated in the womb of the Republican Party. I've been trying to come up with once you take away abortion and once you take away the bigotry against people's sexuality. Now, I've been trying to come up with a really good slogan for the Republican Party, and I think I've hit on one, Bob.
What's that?
The Republican Party, screwing up America since 1860. The Republican Party screwing up America's economy since 1860. Because, and no kidding, it was shortly after the Civil War that we had the huge Republican-generated depression.
Oh, yeah.
Of the, 1870s, 1880s? Yep. And it went in a cyclical form. And every time the Republicans got into power, it was all eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die. And the economy collapsed. And then a liberal or a progressive or a Democrat comes along, cleans it up, and then we start the cycle all over again. We're in the middle of one now with George W. Bush.
I guess it's kind of like, what is that reoccurring nightmare you have, you know?
Yeah. It is. It is a 200 and some odd year long recurring nightmare, the Republican Party. I've been working on some other slogans, things like the Republican Party, putting the con back in conservative.
Conservative starts with con. It starts with a,
con means against.
Yeah,
you know, look at the meaning of the two words. The liberal and liberation and liberty all have the same Latin root, Bob.
Who?
And that Latin root is their Latin word for free.
Who said that first? Wasn't it George Washington that said, "May this nation always be blessed with liberality"?
Yep.
I think that was his words. And these, I don't know, conservatives call him the father of this nation. They still hearken back to that day and say, George Washington, the father of this nation. Well, maybe, just maybe, he should have pulled out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know. We got to hit it, Bob.
Okay.
All right. Take it easy. Have a great evening, all right? Later.
Be safe and be who you are.
Trying to all the time.
Bye
now. All right. Take a quick break and we'll come back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Working.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll, supposedly they say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have.
Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Straight to the phones. Our good friend Brad is with us, calling from California, heading into the hills. Hey, Brad, you're head on. Thanks for calling.
Hey, buddy. Thank you for either staying up late or waking up early. Not sure what you did last night, but
I'm not sure either.
But it was great radio, and great to see folks coming together for a true noble cause. Frankly,
yes, we are, this is not the end. This is the beginning.
Well, I hope you're right, and I hope that the message has gotten out to these guys, and there's a lot of folks who I think need to be held responsible for what they did today, at least 19 Democrats, if not more, in my opinion, who refused to, frankly, stay up all night as you did and fight for this country. That's a noble cause, not what George Bush was talking about, but in fact, the people who, you know, are willing to fight, even if it looks like we may lose, but are you know, out there to set an example of what it looks like to have an opposition party and to fight the good fight.
Well, Brad, it just strikes me that these mugwump senators, these 19 Vichy senators, Quislings, whatever you want to call them, you know, they come 4th of July, every last one of them will be somewhere that there is some red, white, and blue bunting spread, and they'll talk about the nobility of our founding fathers. And I hope the words hang in their throats, because they are separated. They're no part of what that means. You know,
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I really don't know what they're thinking. They told us during the Roberts hearings that, oh, they're going to wait for the next one, and that's really when they're going to fight. These people, when the hell are they going to fight, if not now? And I don't know what the hell they're thinking, frankly.
Well, is that the new Democratic slogan? Keeping our powder dry since 2005. I'm disgusted with them. If those 19 had been at the Alamo, and never mind the moral implications for a moment, if those 19 had been at the Alamo, they would have had they would have headed for Mexico with the white flag.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. And I don't know. It's plexing. I mean, at least you had a reason. And this will sound strange, but with Byrd, at least, excuse me, at least he voted for Alito. And he voted for cloture. I, you know, it's it's strange to say, but I think the folks who voted against Alito, but they were afraid to stand up and fight for a filibuster, to fight for that vote, I almost think they're worse, Bob.
Oh, well, I think, yeah, I can understand that, Brad. And I can almost, I mean, I don't agree with it, but I know what politicians do in this state. And I mean from Senator Byrd down to the county commission level. If the religion industry says boo to them, the color all drains right out of their faces, and they start scrambling to find some way to pander, some way to kowtow. It is the millstone that hangs around West Virginia's neck, especially the Democratic Party here. I can't explain. Oh my God, Brad, I cannot explain Daniel Inouye.
Yeah.
This man lived in a concentration camp, Brad.
Yeah.
This man knows what that looks like. He should know better.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and it's just perplexing, and you wonder who the hell there is out there to fight for you anymore. And the fact that these guys, the Young Turks, who had this filibuster they've been on the air since last Thursday or something. And by the way, I think you guys are actually competitors normally on the air.
I don't like to think of it that way, but yeah, we're on at the same time.
You're on at the same time, and yet that's the point, though. You know, you certainly didn't worry about that. And you said, look, this is a cause that's greater than any of us. Let's all pitch in together here and fight this good fight. And that's what you did. And, why the Democrats can't come together to realize that, to understand that, and to understand that sometimes, the fight is what matters, not whether you win or lose, but how you fight. That is what's perplexing to me, and, that it takes a radio program, and they're a satellite radio program, that it takes a satellite radio program like that to lead the people in Washington instead of the other way around is just maddening. But I don't want to get you any madder than you already are, Bob.
Well, I don't think you could, frankly. I don't think you could, Brad. But I'm one of those Anne Frank optimists, that the people are basically good and all of that stuff. I believe that something is going to come of this because we put the entire liberal blogosphere, as far as I can tell, Fire Dog Lake, Coase, Eschaton, Digme, everybody was talking about this over the weekend. All the credit in the world to the Young Turks for coming up with this. I'm one guy. I couldn't have pulled off the first 16 hours, let alone the 24 or 100. I give them all the credit in the world for coming up with this, and I give them credit for the first great defining moment in the liberal blogosphere. We have the foundation of something we can build on now. I just hope that we won't let it go and won't forget about it.
Well, I promise you, I'm not going to let it go. I'm not going to forget about it. I'm going to keep on fighting, as I know you will too. And listen, I got to get right to a meeting here. I had hoped to be home to call you from a landline, but I can never find enough hours in the day with everything that's going on.
Yeah,
right
we
now,
need man. To move to we need yeah we need to move to Jupiter and get that 72-hour day.
Yeah, I hear you. So listen, Bob, thank you and thank you, Agnes, for everything you guys did. I had a blast handing off to you last night in the middle of the night.
Oh, wasn't that fun?
You rock. That really was.
All right. Best of luck with your meeting. Knock them down. Hope to hear from you again soon. And of course, I camp out at bradblog.com.
All right, you're the best, my friend. We'll talk soon.
All right, take care. Our good friend Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Go by. There is more news breaking out of that blog probably than just about any other. And it is certainly at the top of my list. I read Brad Blog. I read Come Armageddon. I read Fire Dog Lake. And Coasts and you that is where you're going to get your information now. You can't count on Matt Lauer or Brian Williams or Katie Couric or Bob Schieffer, any of the clowns at Fox or the Fox wannabes at CNN. Give it up. They're not going to do you any good. I mean, we just had a defining moment. We just got through an absolute constitutional crisis in the United States of America. And it was as you could hear the crickets on all of the news networks. I tell you what, let's just blow through into the next hour. We don't need to stop. I've still got the energy from this morning going. I don't know how, but I do. Ben is with us, calling from Illinois. Hey, Ben, you're head on.
Hey there, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, and, you know, everyone who's listening, my message is we did win.
Yes, we did. That's what I'm trying to get across here.
Eight days ago, there was absolutely not a single chance that there would even be the most token opposition. And it's only because of activism. It is only because we held their toes to the fire and we said, hey, dance with the one what brung you.
And some did and some didn't.
And, you know, I mean, the ones, you know, just like in the barn dance, the ones that dance with their girl get rewarded later.
Yep. And some people find themselves lonesome in a corner somewhere.
That's exactly what's going to happen, because I guarantee you I don't have any kisses for them.
No. And, you know, I'm sure that there are Democrats in West Virginia who would absolutely be horrified to hear the things that I'm saying in regard to Robert Byrd and John Rockefeller. But honest to God, Ben, they're dead to me.
Robert Byrd was a man of honor until today.
He cast it all aside.
He stepped away from honor today. Now, I don't know if this is because of his, you know, organic defects in his great age, or because, you know, he's just too tired to fight anymore. But he absolutely has a leadership position within the Democratic Party, or had one. And had he gone against Alito, and had he gone for cloture, I really believe there we would have had a much better chance of winning this today. Because he would have carried more than the weight of his one vote.
But for the first time, and I cannot remember it happening. I cannot remember an instance in which this ever occurred. For the first time today, and you know, never mind the bankruptcy vote, the class action, all of that stuff. He did what he did, going all the way back to the 1964 Voting Rights Act. He did what he did. But today, I saw him do something that I have never seen him do before, and that is to act out of sheer knee-knocking terror. There is no other way to explain this than to say that Robert Byrd today acted out of fear. And that breaks my heart.
Maybe he did. Maybe he did. I'm not afraid of these guys. You know?
No.
The worst the Nazi can do is kill me.
Where was your Senator Dick Durbin in all this?
He was leading it.
That's what I thought.
And he was leading it, and he had to bang on Obama's kneecaps to make him stand up and take notice and act like a man.
Well, I saw Obama's comment, Ben, that he didn't want to win by virtue of a procedural maneuver, and I just had to think. You know, I'd love to ask him. I'd love to say, Senator Obama, was the Underground Railroad a procedural maneuver? You know, was that bold walk toward the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, was that a procedural maneuver? Was it a procedural maneuver when Gandhi walked to the sea and made salt? They won those fights because they dared to fight them.
That's right. The thing you have to understand is if you stand up, they will be afraid of you.
Well, we
fascists are afraid of nothing more than somebody who will stand up to them.
We saw that this afternoon. Bill Frist came to the floor to yammer on for a few minutes before they called the question. You know what he was doing, Ben? He was counting votes.
Yeah.
He was killing time until they could count votes. He wasn't sure if he had enough votes to defeat cloture, and I had to invoke cloture. I had to sit there and listen to him talk about that. Let's not turn back all the progress we've made since 2003. It made me sick, Ben. It made me sick when I heard him say, "If you don't like Judge Alito, vote against him. That's your right."
Yep.
Well, it was also our right to stop that nomination dead in its tracks because Samuel Alito is an enemy of the people of the United States. Samuel Alito is an enemy of the Constitution of the United States. God knows Samuel Alito is an enemy of every single woman in these United States.
You know what else is our right?
What?
It is our right to impeach his ass.
Yes, it is.
And I really believe that when we take over, and there's no way we're going to take over until we have a full slate of real progressives, because no one else will fight hard enough.
Well, that's right, and I hope you'll get this message over to Senator Durbin, and we all need to get this message over. When we take the Senate back in November,
yep,
these mugwumps, these notorious 19, the chaff, the Judas goats, I don't want them to have the chairmanship of so much as the stream litter in committee.
Heck, I'm wondering if we can keep them from having their office supply budget.
I mean, I want them punished.
Yeah.
Get in line.
Get in line.
Lead, follow, or get out of the way.
Well, I think we see that there are 19 people we have got to remove from office.
Yeah. And frankly,
and they are a bigger priority to me than the Republican.
Well, it absolutely, Ben. I mean, let's look at it this way. Everybody, we can't lose Senator Byrd. You know, what if we had a Republican here? We can't add to the Republican majority. He just did. What was he? He was adding to the Republican majority when he voted for the bankruptcy bill. Joe Biden voted for the bankruptcy bill. What the hell difference is there?
Look, Byrd is following in the illustrious steps of Zell Miller and Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, he is.
And just let's understand it. He may have been our friend once, but he is no longer our friend. He is now one of the enemy. And sad to say, sometimes old friends have to be sacrificed to win a battle.
Or sometimes the people you think were friends, you find out weren't all along. They're in many ways. And there is no expressing, Ben, the heartbreak, the grief that this causes me to say, because I was raised on Robert Byrd, okay?
Yeah.
I was raised on his nobility. But the fact of the matter is, he's been good at bringing stuff to West Virginia, and God knows West Virginia deserves it. We have been a third world country, and I know that he was effective when I heard Inside the Beltway Republicans calling him Senator Pork Barrel and complaining about the fact that we get a damn road through our mountains. So
yep.
he was effective in that regard, and I'm proud of what he did. But when it comes right down to it, upon many occasions, he has voted with the Republicans. Our anti-war friends need to understand this, Ben. He never came out against, per se, the Iraq War.
No, never has.
What he came out against was the manner in which it was waged, and the manner in which the Congress of the United States completely abdicated its power to the unitary executive. That's what he was about.
Yep, I agree.
So,
it's very frustrating. It's frustrating sometimes to be on the side of right, because there's evil all around you, and there always will be. You know, it's not a fight that you can ever fight and completely win. You know, to a degree, we're like Sisyphus. We have to keep pushing that rock up the hill, but we have to keep pushing it.
Yeah, well, because the alternative, it's not only unacceptable, it's immoral.
Exactly right.
Ben, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate your thoughts, and I'm glad you see it for what it is and can be, that you see it for the victory that it was. We scared them today.
We scared them today, and let's scare them to death next time.
Absolutely. I want them. Well, but we got to find somebody that's willing to do it. So I say that if you got $10 to send, if you can forego your movies this going to the movie or something, and you want to give it to a Democratic candidate, I got a list right here of people who deserve it and people who don't. And those 19 mugwumps, those 19 dinos, those 19 Vichy Democrats, those 19 Quislings do not deserve another blessed dime. And
another vote from an honorable Democrat.
Exactly, exactly. And I tried to send an email to Move On. They're hard to get hold of. I want them to understand that this is one of those fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me situations. No more. No more. They just because somebody's running against a Republican does not entitle them to the hard-earned dollars of liberals all across the United States.
Exactly right. You take care, sir.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And to Gene, who has been holding and holding. Thanks, Gene. You're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of, I'm confused.
I know.
On the one hand, it was all set because I was all ready to fight with you about staying in the Democratic Party. Because seriously, I feel so frustrated. I'm tired of putting what effort I can put into working with that party and seeing nothing done.
I understand that frustration, Gene. I absolutely do. But you've got to understand the thing that everybody who would like to march out of the Democratic Party has to understand right now is that, one, it's salvageable, and two, the way that, you know, our Constitution doesn't even contemplate one party. It doesn't contemplate party at all. It contemplates, in its original draft, it contemplates people who were committed to the success and the growth of this nation and the survival of this nation. It doesn't contemplate that they would be aligned with this faction or that faction, and the ratification signatures on the Constitution were not dry before everybody started pairing off into party. And it's been two parties from day one. And the problem is, there's no room in our system. I mean, unless you can modify the Constitution, and maybe that groundswell will begin to take root. I don't know. But unless you can modify the Constitution, Gene, and have a situation where you can have two or three or four parties, excuse me, forming coalition majorities inside the Congress, then the Greens, the Libertarians, the whatever party, they are going to remain forever irrelevant. We have got to, I think as Democrats, we have got to reach out to the Greens and explain to them that they have an opportunity to really make a change inside the party and really, really effect a transition back to the Democratic Party that I was raised to believe in, the Democratic Party of FDR and JFK. And not the Democratic Party of the Democratic Leadership Council.
Well, I would tend to agree, but there's a couple reasons why I'm seriously considering going green. And number one, I see the Democratic Party is so large. You say it's eligible, but we talk about the Republicans. They've been going at this since Reagan or before. But the point of it is the Democrats have allowed them to do this for just as long.
Yes.
So is that party really salvageable? I'm not sure.
We have the political equivalent right now, Gene, of a party that has a really, really ugly case of battered spouse syndrome. We have been kicked. We have been slapped around. If we stood up on our hind legs, the Republicans came and slapped us, and we have never dared to slap back. It's evident in right-wing hate radio. It's evident in Limbaugh. It's evident in Hannity, in O'Reilly, in the Savage Wiener. They spend their lives and they make millions upon millions of dollars every year doing nothing but committing the political the political equivalent of spouse abuse.
Okay, I see your point. But here's another question that I have. You just said that about the whole thing about we have a two-party system and so on and so forth. But I personally believe that there's the only way we can prevent something like this happening again is to, you know, have more than one than that two-party system, I think.
Well, but you've got to grow it. And, Gina, I don't want to be depressing or anything. If that is the road that you decide to travel, I wish you the best on it, and you know, I mean, it's not like I'm gonna not like you or anything, but you've got to do it with your eyes open, and you've got to understand, Gene, that you are not going to see any tangible results of that effort in your lifetime.
Well, that might be the case, but I'm not sure that I'm not completely sure that. The Democratic Party can be reformed. It's so large. There's so many money interests.
Well, and what you're doing, if you look, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but let's try an analogy here.
Okay.
If you step back and you look at the Great Pyramid of Giza,
okay,
that thing has stood for thousands upon thousands of years. And it is monolithic, like the two parties in this country are monolithic. And looking at that, you cannot conceive of ever changing it. But what you don't realize when you're looking at it is that that thing has been changed over the course of 5,000 years. That thing was faced in limestone and shown white in the sun. It may even have been painted. We don't know. Okay? So when we talk about the Democratic Party, you're not going to change it from the and the other side of it is if you try to change that pyramid by removing the capstone and every stone underneath it, you're never going to get that job done. I love Howard Dean. Howard Dean is not going to effectively reform the Democratic Party. I believe in his message. I believe in his wisdom. I believe in what he's trying to accomplish. But he is not going to somehow transform that entire structure. What has to happen, Gene, what has to happen with all of us is it starts at the base of the pyramid. And that is running for your Democratic Executive Committee, running for your county commission, your city council, hell, running for literally dog catcher or your local library commission. That is where it begins. And that is where you innervate people. That's where you energize people. And you know, it's the meaning of grassroots. It starts from the ground up, not from the top down.
I agree with you. And that, see, this is why I feel that being working, say, with the Greens or some other third party where I could do the dog catcher bit without having to do the opposition, having part of my own party against, you know, weighing me down, I think that would be easier to build up from the grassroots to be something really formidable.
You do have a chance, but also you got to, you know, you're in Oregon, I'm in West Virginia, and I will guarantee you that in either instance, if you go and you look at the statutes, the playing field is tilted against the established parties, so that, you know, I mean, maybe do you have a green primary in Oregon?
Well, not that I'm aware of.
No, I didn't think so. So what you've got to do is there are myriad hoops to jump through if you want to run as an independent. You got to get petition signatures. You got to get this many. They've got to be in by this time, and that's from dog catcher on up. And they've got to be verified by the Secretary of State or the county clerk. It is all set up it's set up to work against you. If you're willing to engage in that Herculean effort, I applaud you and I commend you, and you will have my full support. But at least understand going in that this deck is stacked against you.
All right, I'll give you that. The other thing I had, now I know I got to be quick. Now the other thing I'm thinking is, okay, if you look at the Democratic Party, the majority, let's assume that the majority of the party is progressive. If the progressives were to leave and all you had were the DLC folk, they wouldn't have any money, would they? They might have some, but could...
Well, you know, Gina, sorta. But one of the transformations of the Democratic Party that took place with Bill Clinton, and I offer this without commentary, pro or con, is that Bill Clinton built a machine that was much more effective at bringing corporate money into the party. Now, Howard Dean showed us that monumental amounts of money can be raised a buck at a time. And I think that's the paradigm we need to follow. Move on. That $830,000 that Robert Byrd so gladly accepted, that was raised $5, $10 at a time. Those weren't the $1,000 chuckle checks written by millionaires.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, it does, but I'm not sure. I'll stick with being a Dem for now, but I really have my questions on this. And if I'm gonna stick with this, and we're gonna really, like you said, we're gonna have to tell the Greens and everybody else on the left that, hey, look, we'll bring in and we'll support your efforts to really change the Democratic Party, you know, from within, because right now it just seems to me like we're kind of spinning our wheels.
We are. But the thing is, we've got to come away from this thing, Gene, with a rededication of purpose.
Okay.
This is, because this is not give up. This is build from this moment toward November of 2006, because whether they went ahead and voted like dinos and mugwumps and quislings and Vichy, every Democratic member of the United States Senate knows now that there is an incredibly vocal progressive movement out there. It's like Ben Burch said, Gene, we took it from absolutely zero possibility to the point that this afternoon Bill Frist had to take time to sit there and run his fool yap on the floor while his underlings were out there scurrying around wondering, you know, dear God, do we have the votes?
Well, okay, but there's one thing I got to say. One last thing, and I promise I'll let you go.
All the time in the world, Gene. Don't hurry. You know this is conversation radio.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not used to talking this long. Look, 2006, it's great to go ahead and work for that, but from my perspective, we've had a lot of big defeats, even a little victory. Is there something we can do in between and now and then to, you know, to really... You know, like start a recall on some of these Republicrats or whatever you want to call them.
There is the very thing that I would suggest, and I hope it can become a progressive movement with these Dino Democrats in individual states who happen to be up for re-election. This is in my particular state. Robert Byrd is up for re-election. I swear, the most solemn oath I can make. When the May 9th primary comes around for the Democratic Party in West Virginia, he has no primary opposition. He doesn't have to spend a nickel. But I swear, Gene, that I will leave his name blank. I'll go and vote for my dog catcher and my library commission and my members of the legislature or county commission or whatever. I will leave Robert Byrd's name blank, and I will tell his office that, and I will tell as I will urge as many people as it is humanly possible for me to do so to do that, to send that man a message. And if that whatever Democrats are up for re-election that were among this mugwump crowd, people need to leave their names blank in the primary, Gene, because even if they're unopposed, trust me. Please believe me on this. Uh-huh. An unopposed politician looks at his primary numbers versus the primary numbers of his opponent in the other party, and that gives them their first initial idea of what they're up against come November.
Well, it was pretty doggone sneaky of him to hold it off until 2 days before anybody else could, you know, stick in there for the primary. So it's like, If I were you, I'd say, well, I'd better watch these guys even at the start of the primary announcement season. And, you know, if anything at all smells fishy, stick somebody in there. You can always withdraw later.
Unfortunately, in West Virginia, it's just too late.
Yeah.
We can't do anything except leave his name blank. And the thing is, if he starts getting letters and notices and cards and email, you know, he's fond of things on lined paper or personal stationery, like he said in his "I'm going to vote yes" statement. You know, everybody, don't ever send another email to Robert Byrd. Fax it to him on lined paper with little coffee cup stains and jelly marks on it, and put it through the fax machine to him, because apparently that impresses him. You know, you sign it in a brown Crayola if you have to. But the point here is, get it across to him that you are doing this, and if you can, you know, it's the power of exponential growth. If you can get two people to do it, and they can get two people to do it, next thing you know, you got a movement on your hands.
Okay, well, all right, I'll stick it out. But man, right now I'm feeling kind of depressed. But I'll say that you give me a little bit of fire in my belly, not much, but just a little.
Well, you know, I love a challenge, and I'm a stubborn little cuss. We have my parents to thank for that, I guess, and my lovely wife is right behind me there with stubborn. Oh, you don't know from stubborn until you've run across her. So, you know, I guess that part of this process appeals to me, Gene, and perhaps her as well.
Okay, well, I'll catch you later. But this is what I've been going through right now, because it's like I can think the rolling eyes, and I went over to Coase, and of course there's the Time magazine with the words there that I'm not going to repeat, but I just...
Yeah, we are... I know exactly what you're talking about. And it feels like that.
Yeah.
I think Agnes has something to say, Gene.
Okay.
There's one thing you need to remember. You're not by yourself. You're not alone. You know, it's very easy to feel cut off from everything, especially with what's going on now. But you're not alone.
Well,
there's people with you, not standing behind you, but standing with you.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is that, you know, throughout history, there have been people who have rebelled against tyranny, and you can't beg on your knees.
Uh-huh.
If you don't stand up to them now, we're going to have it bad, but our children are going to have it worse. And all we have to do is look back to our grandparents and their grandparents and remember how it was. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people shared stories in their families, but my family went through the Great Depression.
Same here.
Yeah, and it affected them. It affected the way that they viewed the world and how they did things. And now I feel better off than what my parents were when they were growing up. But yet I see the same type of idealism coming forth that wants to run everything into the ground. And what they don't realize is if they run it into the ground, there's nothing left for them to rule. So if we stand up to them and say, no, you can't do this. You can't, you know, you can't destroy our economy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take away our rights as human beings, not just our constitutional rights, but our rights as humans.
Mm-hmm.
They have no alternative. They're there to represent us. And if we take that right from them, then there's nothing left for them. You make them powerless.
Okay.
So Gene, don't feel like you're alone.
Yeah,
we're with you.
Yeah, don't let them. And they have tried so hard at that, Gene. And I know you want to go, but I'll let you. But they've tried so hard to ghettoize us. Don't go into the ghetto. Emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, or physically, do not let them put us in the ghetto. Because that's what they want to do most of all. Gene. Thanks so much, dear. Would you turn? Yeah, thanks, Gene. There you are.
Okay.
Wrong button. But thanks so much. And you know, I know how it feels. It hurts. Dadgummit, it hurts. But the hurt will heal. And find that place of hurting and replace it with determination and tenacity.
Okay.
All right. You have yourself a great evening, Gene. It's always so good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
That's the only way I know to approach this. Either, I mean, you can let them steamroller us, or you can find the people who will fight and fight with them and fight for them. I know that liberals and progressives in Massachusetts are so proud of their two senators. Liberals and progressives in New York are so proud of their two senators today. I wish, oh, God, I wish I had two senators to be proud of today, but instead I have that sick, bilious feeling in the bottom of my gut that is the mark of endless shame. Just endless shame. Now, we've got to take a break. Agnes, I'm sorry, if you'll just put this caller on hold, we'll come right back to him. We've got a knockoff for a couple of minutes. I'm not going to run past tonight's Cup of Joe report. I did that last week, and I swore I'd not do it again. This is Head On. And, well, you know who I am. You know the phone number, too. 877, the number 4, Head On. 877-443-2366. Stand up, damn it.
You gotta be cruel too. the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. 8 months ago, the Iranians elected a radical Islamic president. Last week, the Palestinians put into power a political party who wants Israel destroyed. In both cases, the Iranians and Palestinians were reacting to American foreign policy. Instead of being wimps and negotiating with people, we decided we had to show the world what a bunch of tough guys we were, and now everyone else has to elect their own tough guys to show they're not going to get pushed around. So we push them, and they push us, and who knows where it'll all lead. If the Iranians and Palestinians can feel free to spit in our faces a little, they can do so because by invading Iraq, we've shown the world that we're not so tough after all. I know some people are saying, and I used to believe it myself, that if we had only done the right thing in Iraq, help rebuild their country and really make a better life for the Iraqis, things would be different. But you know what? If we had that much class, we would never have invaded Iraq in the first place. Frankly, I never expected much of anything from the corrupt, incompetent jerks we have running the country now. The only tool they have is a hammer, so every problem looks like a nail. And now we're all getting screwed. But give credit where credit's due. The Republicans, their corporatist allies, and their cronies in the so-called professional media have managed to accomplish something extraordinary. In just 5 short years, they've turned the greatest country in the world into a laughingstock. I'm sure they're all very proud. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Minutes and change before the hour. We're halfway through on this Monday night. You know, Monday nights are always my favorite because Monday nights come after two long, silent days. It's been a little bit different this weekend with the filibuster for the filibuster. God, I'm proud to have participated in that. And, frankly, there are so-called liberal talkers who didn't participate in that, who I think time will come will find themselves wishing that they had. And I was proud to be there to see the birth of something really, really big. A quick email before we run back to the phones. And this one's, a couple of these are personal. Our friend David in South Carolina says, could you please wish my daughter Candace a happy birthday sometime tonight? She turns 9 today, and she's a huge fan of you and Agnes. She loved that Thanksgiving Eve story. Happy birthday, Candace. Happy, oh, the happiest birthday to you. Dear, you're turning 9, and there are some of us, honey, who will not let other mean people mess with your future. We absolutely won't. And I'll share this with you, too. Got an email from our buddy Kyle. Happy birthday, old nursery mate. Because, yeah, I celebrate, I'm going to get to celebrate my birthday tomorrow night by listening to George Bush talk about his further plans for screwing up America. but Kyle and I have a couple of days difference between ours, and we literally were. We were nursery mates at the hospital where we were both born, and we have been fast friends ever since. And that's kind of neat. Let's go back to the phones. Benedict at Large is calling us from Florida. Hey, Benedict, you're head on.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing okay. You?
I'm surprised you're doing okay. You got two senators. I only got one.
Well, you know, once the screwing is started, you know, the math becomes rather irrelevant.
Well, you've been on the chat. You've seen me posting.
Yeah.
Get back on the phone. Call them again. Plug their lines again. Tell them the vote wasn't free.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing I did. I called Bill Nelson down here, and I said, look, man, I called you all weekend. I couldn't even get through. And I'm sorry. You know, I'm not a single issue guy mostly, but this one was single issue. I'm not voting for you anymore, and I don't care what you're running for.
Right. And I'm doing the same thing with Byrd and Rockefeller's office, Benedict.
I've heard.
This is, and again, I'm so glad you said that. I'm not a single-issue guy. I'm not one of these people that walks around breathing through their mouths and rubs the hair off the back of their knuckles from walking on them, you know, back and forth to the anti-abortion rallies. I'm a complex guy. You're a complex guy. Progressives and liberals, by definition, are complex human beings.
Yeah.
We're not single-issue voters.
We find it tough to get behind somebody because we don't like this, but we do like that.
Right.
You know? And we have to pick and choose.
But the thing is, this time, this is not a single issue. Samuel Alito was not a single issue nominee. He was nominated for that position on the court.
He was nominated for a very specific reason, and that reason was very specifically against me.
Yeah. Against all of us who believe in the Republic as it was constituted by the framers of the Constitution.
I grew up studying that stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
He was nominated as a, you know, you got to remember, he doesn't exist in a vacuum. Before him was Harriet Myers, and I had to listen to that confounded Bill Frist today talking, everybody deserves an up or down vote.
I almost think they put Myers up there as a plant to distract.
Exactly. I think it was Mike Malloy who used the phrase stalking horse. She was a stalking horse for the right. She was a little bit of chicken liver thrown out on top of the lake before the hook goes in the water. That's exactly what she was. And you know, she didn't get an up or down vote. We know what they are. They're hypocrites, Benedict. It's pretty plain, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyways, like I said to all your listeners, get back on the phones, flood their voicemails, flood their emails, break their faxes, let them know, make them pay the price and stuff. But I did want to bring something else up.
Do please.
I had, my girlfriend was here and she's never much been political and everything, but she was listening in the background as I listened to the votes on Young Turks and everything. And she saw me, and she had gotten into it, finally. She left. She had to go meet some folks and everything, and she went out to a gas station and get a little cheap piece of pizza. And they had the vote, the Senate vote, on CNN at the store. And there were, like, three employees there. I mean, what do you get? You know, we're talking minimum wage. You know, but there were like three employees there, and they were watching it, and they all started crying.
Good.
They all
Good.
Started crying.
I mean, I think there's a line from The Lord of the Rings where Gandalf says, "I will not say, do not weep, for not all tears are an evil."
My girlfriend just piped in over. She said, one of them said, "I'll never be able to make it with my three kids."
No. They don't, and the thing is, these guys with their $200,000 a year senatorial salaries,
they don't care.
They don't care. They
well,
don't know. Look, there is, we found out today, Benedict, to be quite honest, we found out today what it meant when they killed Paul Wellstone.
God, I had to go that far, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
We found out what it meant. That was a leader. That was a guy who did care. Who did care what happened to people working three jobs at minimum wage. Yeah, my I sat here and my eyes were filled with tears, and it was these were not tears of sadness. They were tears of absolute. If I had had to open this microphone at the time that vote was being taken, I would have been mute. I was so hurt, so angry, so ashamed. More than anything
just
else,
like this
so
afternoon.
Ashamed.
Just like this afternoon, Bob.
I
couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I mean, Nelson. I mean, I was trying to get on to his voicemail from like Saturday. During Saturday, it was broken.
Oh, you couldn't.
Was broken.
Yeah, you couldn't.
His email was broken.
Yeah, and not just the Washington offices. You couldn't.
I called a number of different numbers.
You couldn't get through. And I think they got to the point where they didn't want to hear anymore.
No, the guy, what I finally got through about 3 o'clock this afternoon, and the guy that I talked to was very nice. He was very nice. And, you know, I told him, hey, you know, I tried to get through, and I know why and everything. And he said, okay, you know, zip code and all that, which, of course, I'm from him, so I'm not going to hide it or anything.
Yeah.
I'm a voter for Nelson. I always have. You know, and he was very nice and everything, and he says, I'll make sure that Nelson knows. You know, I mean, what more can he do?
Well, the thing that I kept hearing over and over again, Benedict, was that tallies were going on in individual Senate offices. Like little referendums were going down.
Well, yeah, but when you got that much going on, I mean, excuse me, go to the polls. I mean, the best poll is the voting poll, as long as you don't have it counted on an electronic machine, I guess.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, but I mean, the polls are another way of, you know, taking interim votes and everything. And they should do that because, you know, they should know what to do generally, but sometimes they need to come back to us and say,
yeah,
what do you think about this? What do you think about that? You know, I need some help on this one. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
and Nelson wasn't sure. And I don't know why he didn't get sure, because everything he had was broken on Friday night, Saturday night, by Saturday night.
What kind of a relationship does he have with the DLC, Benedict? Do you know?
Offhand, no, but that's on my to-do list. I've got to find that out. I never knew him one too much hanging around with them, but I've never really looked at that specific thing.
Well, I think
I'm going to.
We all have a right to call for an answer on this. I want specific answers from Robert Byrd. I want, because Byrd, to be honest, to be fair, Byrd's going to go no, or he's going to go yes on cloture and yes on Alito. I'm curious about Rockefeller's vote, because if he votes no on Alito, I'm going to have a fit.
Now, Rockefeller, you remember, he was one of the ones that was consulted by Bush regarding the NSA,
mm-hmm,
and everything. And what did he do? He didn't type it into his computer. He wrote it on paper.
He was afraid.
And I can't help trying to associate writing it on paper that time and this vote. I think they got to him. I think they got the bird. I mean, you grew up with these guys. I didn't. I mean, I grew to know them, you know, as a kind of a foreigner or something. But I think people got into.
Well, in Rockefeller's case, I'm afraid we're just going to. Well, no, let me back up, Benedict. What you saw with Rockefeller, one, he played it close to the vest to the very end. Kept everybody wondering, everybody waiting. And then, you know, his name is far enough down the list. When he saw the handwriting on the wall, he voted, you know, he voted with the majority.
Yeah. In other words, it was a free vote for him.
Yeah. Well, he's not up for re-election this year. He may not be up for re-election 2 years from now. I can't remember.
Fine. But he thought of it as a free vote. I mean, if that's what he was thinking, he thought of it as a free vote. We have to let people like him and my Bill Nelson. No, I'm sorry. It's not a free vote. It's just not a free vote.
But you raised the issue of that handwritten letter. That sent chills down my spine when that story first came out, Benedict.
That was weird.
I mean, when you can scare a Rockefeller, when you can scare a man who can buy George Bush for what he's worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth, when you can scare that guy into thinking that they are going to kill you, You have done a job. And but the thing with all of this is that with that, you know, with that as prologue, with that as background, Benedict, daggum. This is the poster child for the excess of this so-called unitary president, and you won't stop a guy who's going to rubber stamp that from getting on the court? My God.
That's a lot of pressure. I mean, people have associated this administration with some new mafia and everything, and I'd hate to go that far, but there almost seems something that makes me want to go there.
Yeah, the evidence, Benedict, the evidence.
Yeah, I guess that's what it's called.
Yeah. Hey, good to talk to you. Always a pleasure, and thanks for the great conversation. It's what makes this so much fun.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
You take care, and listen, keep the spirit, keep the fight, keep the fire. This is not a loss. This is a beginning.
And remember what I've told you. I'll go first.
I'll go first. That's right.
Much okay. Love, Benedict.
Take care.
Hey, Agnes, I love you. Bye-bye.
Benedict at large goes first. And you know what? We need a handful of I'll go first. Let's go now to Bob calling from Butler, PA. Hey, Bob, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm really okay.
Yeah, right. Me too.
Yeah, Agnes is bawling over here. They are tears of anger. Yes, I understand.
I know. I had to ask her what it was she said because I had forgotten what I was going to talk about while I was dialing your number. You were talking, and I was getting into what you were saying, and I forgot what I was going to say. Anyway,
it is the curse of the hold syndrome.
She had said that these people don't understand that what they're doing is going to screw up this country for themselves and their own kids.
Yeah.
They don't care.
No, they don't. And
their base is their corporations and their money, and they can operate from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, as well as anywhere else in the world.
Well, that and the other part of their base are these religious maniacs. I mean, they are what they are. Bob, these religious maniacs don't think that we've got day after tomorrow.
That's right.
I mean, they're waiting for Jesus. Jesus is going to come back, and they're going to get to go kill them some Jews. They cannot wait.
That's right. But, you know, these big money, big corporation people, they're quite willing to do away with the United States of America. It doesn't mean anything to them.
No, it doesn't. And that's why I say that I am going to become physically ill when I see these mugwumps, these dinos, these Vichy Democrats, these go-along, these get-alongs, all wrapped up in red, white, and blue bunting at the 12 Oaks Garden Party barbecue this 4th of July. It is going to make me physically ill.
Well, you know, I have a bad feeling that because the reason we saw so many turncoats here was because they were always turncoats, and they were just playing us all this time, decades after decades.
I think you're right.
And this thing has been so well planned out, you know, and even though the think tanks are relatively recent. You know, I'm going back to pre-FDR maybe.
The Republican Party, Bob, has an incredibly long and effective memory, and I keep trying to remind people that when Social Security was passed, there was not a single solitary member of the Republican Party that voted in favor of creating the Social Security program. I mean, not one. And they looked, when that happened, Republicans all around this country looked at little babies in the cradle and said, son, daughter, I will fight against this communism of Social Security. And I'll raise you to fight against Social Security. And when those grew up, they told their kids the same thing, and it went on. And then, you know, they kind of had their watershed moment in 1964 with the crushing defeat of Barry Goldwater.
Yep.
But they didn't, you know, they didn't put on the sackcloth and ashes. There was no weeping and wailing of gnashing of teeth, Bob. They said right then and there, this is never going to happen again. We're going to pour our energies and our monies into a machine that will someday grind the Democratic Party into dust.
Yeah.
And we are at that moment.
Yeah, and I keep coming back to some a very basic kind of feeling. I'm not religious. I'm spiritual, kind of.
Yeah.
And I do believe there's good and evil, and they're fighting each other. And I don't know where we play into this. Somewhere, I'm sure. But
I'm convinced that we're fighting for the side of good and light.
Well, I mean, yeah, well, we fit into it from our side, yeah. But where we fit in from their perspective, I'm not sure.
Well, if liberal policies, if progressive policies, Bob, were followed, we would have a pretty good shot at a world of tomorrow.
Okay.
Following Republican policies, tomorrow is an open question. I had that story the other night. Germany, the former defense minister or whatever, who is now an associate of Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats in Germany, talking about, well, you know, wir werden nicht on nuclear device.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this, and France the week before had said, it is possible that should the Iranians use a nuclear weapon, we would have to defend this one of our own. And all of this is created on a pile of crap, Bob, because there is not shred number one of proof anywhere that Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapon. But by God, we want control of their oil too. We have not gotten over 1978. We have not gotten over the Iranian Revolution, and we have not gotten over the fact that in that revolution of 1978, they carried huge banners and posters with the picture of Prime Minister Mossadegh, the guy that we personally deposed in the first CIA-sponsored overthrow of a foreign government. They haven't gotten over that, and we haven't gotten over the fact that they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know.
These people, I mean, I'm not kidding when I say that there's no certainty of a tomorrow with these Republicans. They want, okay, George Bush wants to see what happens when one of his nuclear bombs goes off. He wants to see that.
Sure, yeah. I'm sure he and his cronies and friends and corporation people have their claims staked out somewhere where that is going to be least accessible to these nuclear bombs. Nuclear winter is going to affect everybody. But not if
they use the so-called neutron bombs.
Yeah.
Those things just destroy the people, and the radiation, at least the science behind it, says mm-hmm. that the radiation goes away fairly quickly. Remember, Bob, oh, for God's sakes, please remember that, and it was Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman, you know, this freak that chased Clinton's zipper for 8 years.
Yeah.
It was through his stuff that we got some documents out from the secret Cheney Energy Task Force. And among those documents that were gotten out, this is one of those things that's so easy to forget.
Yeah.
Long before the Iraq War had even been begun,
mm-hmm.
Dick Cheney was having meetings, and during those meetings they were passing around maps that had already divided up the oil interests in Iraq. Do you think that those maps don't already exist with regard to Iran?
I think they probably exist in for the entire world.
Yeah.
I think they have it blocked off.
Caspian Sea Basin.
Yeah, Kellogg, Brown, and Root, you can have a little bit of here, and you know, the rest of Halliburton, you all can split this up here, I can't remember who said this, but I think it so means something to me that there are some people that know deep down in their soul what is right and what is wrong, and there are those who don't.
Yeah, and those who don't, according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition, aren't those people called sociopaths?
Yeah.
Isn't that what we're...
Well, let's see. No. Those who don't and don't care...
Right.
...would be sociopaths.
That's who we're dealing
Speaking
with.
Speaking of which, I had my doctor bump my Luvox up again today. I can't take it. I don't know what the hell, and he's saying, yeah, I know. He says he listens to Hartman, and I said, yeah, there's not enough time in the day. I need to quit my job to listen to everybody that I like. Yeah.
Well, you know, the best thing he could do was have that on in the office,
and,
or maybe not.
Well, then he couldn't do his job.
Yeah, he'd have to stop and
Yeah, I don't know.
But
well,
but I mean, when you walk into a that's a separate topic. But when you walk into a doctor's office, Bob, are you is it like it is down here? Every doctor's office has a TV on with Fox running?
No. What happens when I walk into my doctor's office is they have the Pentagon channel on because it's a VA hospital.
And
that's a separate issue. They're trying to do away with most of the VA hospitals. They want to privatize that, too.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's part of that fundraising effort that was mentioned last week, where all the people have to pony up $10, $20, whatever they can, to build a VA hospital in Texas for the soldiers coming back with PTSD, because George Bush has given away the funding for it.
Right. Well, they're going to come back, and they're going to end up living in cardboard boxes underneath one of our bridges here in Pittsburgh. And, you know, I mean, we got a lot of this is a city of bridges.
Oh, I know. More than any other city in the world, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and there's plenty of underpasses to live under. And
Jesus.
I mean, there's been a whole... No, I don't know. I was there one time, and I had to see at least 50 people living under this one particular bridge, but it's well known for people that are homeless to hang out under that and live under that bridge. They've been living there for decades since the I don't know. I was there in the 70s.
Yeah.
And they were there, and they're still there. I see them every once in a while.
Sure they are. And of course, you know, if you ask somebody like Hannity or Rush Limbaugh, well, they're there by choice.
Well, yeah, they are because they have no alternative.
Right.
They have no boots.
Right. It's a Hobson's choice, Bob. You know, you can have the horse by the door or no horse at all.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they have no boots to pull up bootstraps on, so what are they going to do?
Yeah, well, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. The only problem is the people without boats drown.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, Bob, so good to hear from you. Okay, hang in, brother. My God, please hang in there. This is too important to quit fighting now.
I don't have any choice. You know, I'm hanging.
All right. Take care.
Bye
now. And let's see. Let's take a quick break. You guys are so good for me. You absolutely. Hey, you keep us off the ledge. It would be easy to begin crying, but it's a hell of a lot easier and a lot, well, not easier, but it's a whole lot more gratifying to scream and to fight.
No, when I cry, it's bad.
Yeah, when Agnes cries.
Hell's a poppin'.
Yeah, hell's a poppin'. I'm almost afraid to end the show. Don't hit me, Agnes.
Bob.
I'm kidding. Bob. Let's take the break. Will you start some bumper music, please, dear?
I don't know.
Use that phone number, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just wanted to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, but I just thought it was so...
oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway. Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
I love it when Agnes gives me that dirty look when I start talking before she fades the music. I'm Bob. This is Head On. The phone number, of course, you just heard. And email's real easy, too. bob@headonradio.com. Let me share a couple of quick emails with you so I can find what I did with them. Oh, there we go. Yeah. An email from our buddy Hubert. He says the new party line, just pay your damn taxes and shut the boop up. It's about the size of it, unfortunately. And from our pal Larry in Cannonsburg, PA. What amazes me about Senator Byrd is his sudden metamorphosis. He's facing a wealthy Republican opponent, and blam, he abandons his long-held beliefs. Why would a man who's been around as long as he has feel a need to spin in the wind? If he was a young buck just starting out, I might understand it. Obviously, his lust for office outweighs the concerns of his constituents. Doesn't it always? I mean, realistically, we're dealing with political animals, aren't we, Larry? It always does outweigh the needs of his constituents. And do you remember, for those of you who are NFL fans, do you remember a few years back when, oh gosh, who was it? Maybe was it Michael Strahan who was about to set a record for sacks? And I forget which team it was he was playing. Was it the Packers? And it was his record-setting sack, and the offensive line just kind of collapsed. There was no meaning left in the game, and the quarterback allowed himself to be taken down just to give him that record. Do you remember that? Well, Robert Byrd wants to set a record for being the longest-serving senator in the history of the United States Senate. And he has proven in the last few days that setting that record is more important than anything else coming or going. That is, you know, and that's, let's see, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, that's disgusting. So, you know, just, you know, bear that, you know, that's why, yeah, that's, God only, the motivations are legion. And almost every one of them are valid for conversation and valid for your disgust. Let's go to line one. Mike is calling from Florida. Hey, Mike, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I'm doing, well, okay. You know.
Quick question.
Sure.
Are you truly a lefty?
I'm left of center, whatever.
No, that's in left-handed.
Oh, no. I'm ambidextrous. I started out picking up stuff with my left hand when I was a kid, and I had teachers who put the pencil back in my right hand and screwed me up for life.
Ah. Because you realize that left-handed people truly are sinister.
Oh, yes, because that's Latin for left.
Correct.
Yes.
And we forget about that. Now, I was looking at your page, and I thought, I wonder if he's left-handed.
Yeah. I was tickled to death when we found out that my son was.
Ah.
And so we never allowed any teachers to put pencils in his right hand, and you know, we're grooming him to be a left-handed curveball pitcher in the big leagues.
Oh, good. He's got a future, if any of us do.
Yeah, right. Yeah, as long as we're still playing ball.
But you know, just to bring up a couple of things. Unfortunately, we've been sold out for a long time. The Democrats have sold us every which way. Just as the Republicans have, unfortunately.
Yeah, the Republicans are a little more obvious about it.
Correct. I mean, they made no pretense of being for the people.
No.
From the very beginning.
Right. I mean, it's been obvious. I mean, shortly after the well, I mean, remember, and I'm not gooning on anybody's history. It's only fair to remember, before he was ever anything else, Abraham Lincoln was a railroad company lawyer.
Correct.
That's where he got the wherewithal to do what he did, and that has been the history of the Republican Party from day one.
Right, but he was more of a populist.
Oh, by far and away.
Than the most populist Democrat we have nowadays.
Any vision that the Republican Party had basically died with Abraham Lincoln.
Correct. And you know, if you go back to the age of the trusts and so forth, Grant wasn't corrupt, but everyone around him was.
Yeah, they were preying on him. I mean, they were like tapeworms inside him. The Grant administration was the benchmark standard for corruption in Republican government until Richard Nixon came along.
Well, we set a new benchmark.
Oh, yeah, and boy, I tell you what, the bar is. I don't know, is it really high or is it really low?
Lower.
Yeah.
But you know, we tend to forget that that man of the people, Harry Truman, was the originator of the security state.
Mm-hmm.
It was Harry Truman who established the NSC, the NSA, the CIA. It was Harry Truman.
And wasn't that largely at the behest of the Dulleses?
Partially them, partially what was that guy from South Carolina? I will remember his name.
Yeah, I know. I'm at a loss too.
But it was also Truman who changed the name from the War Department, which is what it was always since the founding of the country, to the Defense Department, for the simple reason that it's easier to get money when you're standing in the well of the House or the Senate. It's much easier to get money for defense than it is to get money for war.
Isn't that the truth? Absolutely.
And we've been defending ourselves all over the world since 1946 to everyone else's detriment, including our own.
You know, it would be easy. The way you said that, it would be easy to get a big old chuckle out of it if it wasn't so true and so tragic.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you've read Smedley Butler, haven't you?
Oh, yes. War is a racket.
Exactly. And we haven't changed.
No, nor are we. Back on Martin Luther King Day, we ran excerpts of his speech to the Riverside Church that was called Beyond Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about how there had to be a massive change in social attitude in this country, and that until such time as that happened, we would continue to have Vietnams.
Correct. And every bomb that is dropped on Vietnam explodes here at home.
Yes, it does. And
yeah. He made that point. So did Eisenhower. You know, every bomb we build, you know, every tank that we build is money that we are not spending on our own roads, schools, hospitals. And that was like 1955.
Yeah. What changes it, Mike? I mean, I take a little grief from people saying, oh, you know, Bob, you never provide any solutions. You know, I never set myself up as a solution guy. I'm not the shell answer man. But, are there any answers, Mike?
Well, the answers really were given to us by the founding fathers. For example, Jefferson had it right. Jefferson was the Trotsky of the American Revolution. He was the one that was suggesting we should have a revolution every generation or two.
And just sort of reorganize things.
Correct.
Reset the mechanism. And, well, you know, one of the first things that any established state does is once the revolution is over, you either continue to claim that the revolution is ongoing, or you say the revolution is over, we won, and there will be no more revolutions.
Correct. And unfortunately, Jefferson also gave us the answer. He says, you know, the whole point was in setting up a republic was we had to all be involved in politics, which doesn't mean going down every 4 years and pulling the lever for idiot A or idiot B. it actually means having, I think the Northeasterners have it right. You know, you have town hall meetings. You discuss what the heck is going on.
Yeah, you make your politicians come out of their little ivory towers and get, you know, come down to the bean dinner and, you know, eat the green onions, get the bad breath, and sit, and then everybody's on equal footing, and you talk about what matters.
Right, and you listen to the people. That's the problem. We've got a system that is set up that requires literally nothing from us other than pulling a lever every so often.
Yeah, and the rest of the time we spend watching TV.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, so, there are so many things with the founding of this country. Mike, then I don't know what your attitudes are, and then I'm not advocating one way or the other. But most people don't know, for instance, about the founding fathers, and some of it had to do with the water supply, things like that. These dudes, when these guys wrote the Constitution of the United States, Mike, odds are every one of them was drunker than you and I could get if we started drinking now and went till midnight.
Correct.
They were putting away 2 and 3 gallons of wine and beer a day. So, you know, some of them had handy little laudanum habits, and you certainly couldn't say that at the 4th of July barbecue.
Certainly.
I mean, these were freewheeling individuals.
Oh yeah, they were true revolutionaries.
You know, elections in, I've read one account, elections in Kentucky used to be three-day drunken brawls.
Right. Well, people forget that, that when Washington won his first seat to the House of Burgesses, he did it mainly by buying, I think it was something to the effect of 200-some-odd gallons of whiskey at a tavern in Alexandria, Virginia, and
yep.
getting everybody soused.
I know, and the thing is, you know, I'm not advocating for that. I'm really not. But this was, but the whole idea was an absolutely freewheeling nation that would, you know, it was young and it was vibrant and it was just, and we were going to try new things. And we're past the idea of novelty.
Right.
You know, we're at the Henry Ford stage where you can have any car you want as long as it's black.
Correct.
And so. I don't know where we go. I don't know where we go with this. I mean, this is, you know, it's not about whether or not they were loaded. It's about the fact that they were concerned with things far greater than that.
Right. And, well, the thing is, they were actively involved in the political process, which is the whole point. That's what we were supposed to be doing. And that's what we're supposed to be doing right now.
Yeah.
Rather than sitting here and bemoaning the fact that we've been sold down the river by a millionaires club whose interests are 180 degrees opposed to 99.9% of the working population out here who actually has to get up in the morning, go to work, and earn a living. You know,
yeah,
it was supposed to be a general meeting of us, the people, getting together and going, gee, what's going on? What do we need to do? Not going to a father figure and saying, what do we get? No.
Well, and you know that father figure, what you mentioned there, Mike, reminds me of something, and that is when Jefferson sent Lewis and Clark on their and the Corps of Discovery on their mission, they were under very close orders not to engage in warfare with any of the indigenous peoples they ran into, and they were to always refer to Jefferson as your father in Washington.
Right.
And that, I think in many ways, that's a genesis right there, Mike, of the idea of the executive as something more than the chief magistrate that he was set out to be. We've all come to look to the president that way, haven't we?
No.
No, not all of us, but the people who are working three jobs. This isn't accidental. It's not accidental that the last time a single wage earner household was the norm in America was the Carter administration. There's nothing at all odd about that. It was a deliberate act. If you're working three jobs, you don't have time to go protest, Mike. You barely have time to go vote. It's a curse upon you if you were called to jury duty. And it's a deliberate, gradual pulling away of our civic association with our government.
Correct. And I think that's a bad thing. But
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. So. You know, for those of us who are able to do it, like I said, run for your county executive committee, run for something, be at the court. You ever go to a county commission meeting, Mike?
Oh, sure.
How many people are there? On an average one. I mean, nothing special.
Handful.
Reporters from the local papers, maybe the radio guy and you.
Yeah. Unless there's a hot button issue.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh my God, we've got to keep Brokeback Mountain off the screen.
Yeah, I love that line from Jay Leno. He said George Bush said he hadn't seen Brokeback Mountain, but he had real hopes of drilling for oil there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. How many over here in Raleigh County, West Virginia, they deliberately schedule their school board meetings during the middle of the workday so people can't come to it.
Yeah, well, but, you know, your opinion is not welcome.
It's the last thing in the world they want.
Correct.
So, you know, we can take it back, but it requires some real effort. It might even be a little bit irritating, and you might get to bed a little bit later or have to get up out of bed a little bit earlier. But if you want one of those we the people situations, if you want that republic, you kind of got to do it, don't you?
Exactly.
Mike, so good to hear from you. I hope we'll hear from you again soon.
Absolutely.
All right, take care. Keep the faith.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And our buddy Steve is calling from Jackson County, West Virginia. Jackson County's newest candidate for the Democratic nomination for the House of Delegates. Correct, Steve?
Yeah, actually, I was the first candidate to get in, so I don't know about this new stuff. And again, unless somebody else is in the mail, I'm the only one, so newest would technically be accurate.
So there's only two ways to run an election, unopposed and scared. Hopefully you're in the unopposed category.
That's what it's looking like so far.
Well, there's that phrase again. That at least allows you to keep your powder dry.
Yeah, and the thing that kind of surprised me when I was looking through the list of candidates who filed today, the incumbent Republican is not unopposed.
Really?
He has an opponent in the primary.
Good, so he has to spend some money.
So hopefully that means he gets on the record, so that way if he does get through the primary, because it seems like when I've looked at his voting record and I've looked at his position statements, you'd think they were from two different people.
Oh, I don't doubt it. And the one thing that you can do through given unsolicited advice here, Steve, but you're a fine writer, and the one thing you can do through the primary season is really, really hold his feet to the fire. You know, hold the other guy's feet to the fire, too. But let him, I think there's a real urge or a real desire in this and many other states to see a fighting Democrat. And I wholeheartedly encourage you to be one of those.
Well, I know that I haven't been able to do a whole lot of campaign because I'm just now getting over the flu.
Yeah, that's been a little, yeah.
But the first week, actually got to go out a little bit, got to go to the rural part of the county, supposedly one of the most, if not the most, Republican precincts in my district. And I didn't get a chance to talk to a lot of people, but most of the ones who I did talk to were pretty open to the idea, and all of them, even a couple of Republicans whose doors I knocked on by mistake, wish me well. So
it's a start. You've put one foot in front of the other, and it's the most important thing you can do, Steve.
Yeah, but I think that people respect the fact that it's January and February, and they see somebody who's already making an effort. So hopefully it's one of these things of, I ran long distance when I did track in high school. And there's the old saying that in a mile race, it's not who wins the first lap, it's who wins the fourth lap. But you got to get yourself in position in those first three laps to get ready to pounce when the fourth lap comes.
That's exactly what it is. And let me urge you also, if I may, have you gotten up around Ravenswood yet?
Not yet. Mostly I've been in the southern part of the county. I'm going to start going. Ravenswood itself is not in the district, but there's a...
Oh, is it not?
No, it's in the 13th district.
I see.
Del Martin and Brady Paxton's home district. And but the area around Ravenswood is in my district, and it looks like it's probably one of the most fertile places as far as Democratic votes go.
I was going to say that would be my guess. Well, how's the website?
Well, we just updated to put some positions on labor, and we had some education stuff, and I'm trying to get it archived, so I'm going to be in touch with my webmaster on that education. Once I get that in the archives, I have labor and business practices right now talking about the problems with these incentive packages, because, you hear all these people who, they seem to expect the economic salvation to come from some big company from the outside, and if Toyota wants to bring a plant into here or hire people, pay them good wages, that's fine by me, but if some company wants to come in here and pay people
minimum wage or near,
wage, no benefits, put all the local people out of business, I'm not for that at all. And we're and sometimes we're paying them to do it to us.
You're absolutely right. It's one of the greatest scams in America today. In fact, there's a book out there called The Great Job Scam. You might do well to read it while you're still sort of getting your strength back. Tell everybody.
I've been reading some Jim Hightower where he was talking about a lot of the fight in Austin where they had to deal with the big boxes trying to move into their city. So.
Right. And, of course, right there in downtown Ripley, you've already got one. What is the website address again, please?
www.geocities.com/Steve4WV.
Okay, geocities.com/Steve4WV. And how are your fundraising efforts going?
Well, I had a fundraiser the 12th. It was a little bit disappointing because the venue didn't really promote it like they should have, but I still came out in the black, so that's better than nothing.
Exactly.
But on the other hand, whenever I was doing the budgeting for campaigning, it turns out that a few things I was able to get quite a bit cheaper than I originally budgeted for, so it seems like any disappointment in the fundraising has been offset by finding out, oh my, I can get this stuff a lot cheaper than I thought I could.
Well, that's great. Let me make one other suggestion, if I may, please. We're very close and consider West Virginia Clean Elections people to be very good friends. If you'll go to ohvec.org and click on Clean Elections, have a look at that. See if that's something you could support. And if it is, by all means, touch base with them. So that they can know that you're in their camp and that you want to be part of the future of clean elections in West Virginia.
Well, I'll certainly do that because I'm already on my website indicating support for clean elections because the way I see it shouldn't matter how much money somebody raises. It should matter what they have to say.
Exactly. And we've had calls. We're talking about all this business with the Alito nomination in large part to tonight, Steve, and there is a groundswell out there. We saw it in the movement for the filibuster of Alito over the last several days. There is a groundswell out there, Steve, for people who want to see politicians who are engaged in elections, not out of some sense of self-aggrandizement, but rather out of a sense of working toward a sustainable future. And if you can speak to that for people, I think you'll garner votes like you really can't even imagine.
Yeah, I think that there's a situation right now where I'm in a district where it seems like that people are ready to listen to a message, and I think that if I'm gonna lose, I'm not gonna go down without a fight, and I'm not gonna go down as one of these people who played it safe. Because I mean, I remember T-shirts that a lot of people wore back when I was in junior high and high school that you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's right, and it's always better to aim high and miss than it is to aim low and hit. So.
Yeah.
Please keep us updated, Steve. I'm looking forward to a lot of good things coming from your campaign. Tell everybody your email address again.
Steve4WV@yahoo.com. And depending on my girlfriend's work schedule, either the 11th or the 18th, I'm going to have a big campaign invasion. And like some of my friends from WVU and Marshall area, I'm going to invite over to pass out as many flyers as we can get passed out, so if any of the listeners are going to be close to the Jackson County area, shoot an email and I'll give them the details once everything gets ironed out, which I should know by the end of the week.
By golly,
that kind of
stuff is fun, Steve. Thanks so much for contacting the program. Get to feeling better, will you? We need you out there pounding the pavement.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bob.
My pleasure, always. Do keep us in touch.
I'll certainly do that.
All right. Bye now. And again, www.geocities/Steve4WV. This is an important campaign. This could unseat a Republican in Jackson County, West Virginia, who is desperately in need of being unseated. Let's go to the phones and just keep it rolling. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
This is making me feel better.
Well, it ought to make you feel better. Did you hear the old Serb on the Young Turks?
I heard the old Serb on the Young Turk on the Young Turks. Those two groups don't generally get together and get along too very well.
That just shows you how progressive we are, Bob.
Absolutely.
You know, so it thrills me to hear people from Butler and Pittsburgh and, you know, things like that. If they're still listening, this is Aliquippa High School graduate. So they all know where that is.
Sure.
Me. So I think, I forget who, Mike, I guess, was talking about getting involved in politics. Well, that's the great thing that happened this weekend. I think that this thing that you people put the, participated in this filibuster of the filibuster, I'd say we had more people politically involved than a lot of people have been in a long time. And I think this is the start of something very, very good. You know, so, I mean, okay, it didn't turn out exactly the way we wanted it, but, you know, like you said, Thursday or 5 or 6 days ago, there was no talk of a filibuster. And, you know, I see only positive out of this thing, even though we didn't reach our ultimate goal.
Yeah, and Wayne, I hope I'm not getting any under anybody's skin, but I really do want to let people like Rockefeller and Byrd know that, and the rest of that list, they need to understand this. Their positions on this came at a price.
Yes, it daggone well better, and I think that I hope you do get on, get in. Or get a hold of the people from Move On. I think that's a very valid point. I want to see Move On get their $830,000 back and distribute it to some real Democrats that need it for their election.
Yeah, and challengers, not even necessarily incumbents.
No, exactly. We need, we need challengers.
Well, you know,
there's a lot of incumbents that have to go away.
You mentioned Pennsylvania. Something comes to mind right away, something we talked about in the wee small hours of the morning today, and that is the two other candidates for the Democratic nomination for United States Senate in Pennsylvania, Messrs. Pinocchio and Sandals. They could use some of that Move On money because Bob Casey, if the simple goal in Pennsylvania, for instance, Wayne, is just to get rid of Santorum, put in an old yeller dog or bring in a spotted horse or whatever. Bob Casey's great for that. But
yeah.
This guy came out, he wasn't even called on to do this, and he came out and said, Bob Casey did, came out and said, I would support the nomination of Justice Alito.
He doesn't get any of that $830,000.
No, but you know what? Pinocchio and Sandals, who were challenging him, damn sure need it.
Yes, and that should go to it. And, I'm going to write Robert Byrd a letter, too. I want my $150 back that didn't come from Move On. It came from me.
Yeah, you went without something because of that $150, Wayne.
$150 is a lot of money to me, Bob.
Yeah.
I gave it because, when he came out, when was that? Friday?
Thursday.
Thursday. I couldn't believe it. And I called his office in D.C. and I said, I just heard that that Robert Byrd came out in favor of this guy. And they said, yeah. It's unbelievable to me. Unbelievable.
And I got the sense talking to them that in his office that they were a little surprised, too.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what is just. Well, there is no justification.
I read what passes for a justification. I read what I perceive to be outright lies about receiving letters on line stationery.
That has to be an outright lie. It takes anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks to get a letter to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and those, and remember, I mean, let's make this clear, Wayne. Though he says, if you go to Byrd's website, he says that those letters talked about how outraged and disgraced they were by the way that poor Mrs. Alito was treated by those mean Democrats. Look at the time frame since she did that. Come on, it was an act.
It was an act.
Look at the time frame since she did that. It is not physically possible for a letter to have arrived in Byrd's office in that amount of time.
No. Not these days, and I don't know if people understand why, but that's all because of the anthrax scare.
The guy who sent United States military weapons grade anthrax to people like Peter Jennings and the newspaper office in Florida, and sent it to Tom Daschle.
Tom Daschle.
Yeah. In other words, the domestic American Republican terrorist who attacked the Congress of the United States.
Exactly.
And as a result of that, anything you send to Washington, D.C., to a senator or a congressman, has to be folded, spindled, and mutilated, inspected, neglected, and rejected, x-rayed, irradiated, and it takes 6 weeks to get a letter from Raleigh County, West Virginia, to Washington, D.C., to Byrd's office.
Right, and he said something about it. They use the same two words over and over every letter. You know, that doesn't seem like a setup to you, Mr. Byrd.
Well, yeah, and people who could not possibly know each other or have any connection to each other, except for perhaps for the fact that they take their marching orders from James Dobson.
Well, and that's exactly right, and that's where it came from the religious industry.
Right. If you could sit down
and
with
Dobson's one of their CEOs.
Exactly. If you could take these letters and set them down side by side, it's the same thing you see happen in letters to the editors all over newspapers all over the country. They write the letter for you. They tell you to write it out in your own hand.
Right. Exactly. Change a few words if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in I mean. So, you know, I think, how sad is it that I'm sitting here saying that Robert Byrd has published a lie on his webpage, but I'm convinced
of it. Extremely sad.
I'm sick.
I get no pleasure from doing it, but I've supported Robert Byrd, I've held him in great esteem for a very, very long time. But, you know, that you have to earn that, and you didn't earn that.
No,
you destroyed everything that I thought you stood for.
Exactly. You know, everybody knows who listens to this program that you're actively involved with the with organized labor, and I hope as you're talking to your brothers and sisters in the movement, I hope you can explain to them that with Robert Byrd's approval of Samuel Alito, that he is putting a guy on the court who is inimical to everything that labor stands for.
Well, he is, you know, and listen, big concern of a lot of people is Roe versus Wade, and rightfully so, and that's a concern of mine also. But there are also other concerns.
Well,
the Fair Labor Standards Act,
well, let me
National Labor Relations Act, the right to form and join a union.
Well, here, let me throw one at you that you may not have heard.
What's this?
This is RNS Services, Inc. versus Secretary of Labor. Have you heard about this one?
No.
Okay. This was an opinion that Samuel Alito wrote, and the company in question was a coal processing plant. Okay? And they were found...
We know Alito's a friend of coal.
Yeah. Oh, God. I wonder if he's got his sticker from Blankenship yet.
I bet he does.
But this coal processing plant was found to be in violation of oodles of labor safety laws under the Federal Mine Safety and Health Act, okay?
Yeah.
Samuel Alito wrote in his opinion that the company wasn't covered by mine safety laws because it wasn't actually mining coal. It was just processing.
Oh, it was, yeah, because it wasn't underground.
Yeah.
Now I do. Okay. Now I do remember that. You know. Well, you know, if there's.
And again, that was one of his dissents. That was another one of those cases where he got it wrong.
Listen, you know, here's the thing that people have to remember too, especially people in West Virginia here. You know, all the time that you know, everybody is so upset about all these mining tragedies, and rightfully so, they should be. But while the Republicans were screaming at you that Al Gore was going to take your guns and that John Kerry was going to take your Bibles, George Bush was taking your mining inspectors.
Amen.
Now, you know, do not be duped again. Don't believe this stuff.
Yeah,
watch what these people are doing.
You want another Sago? You want it? You know? You want another Alma? Keep empowering. Is there a Serbian word?
There's a Serbian word for that.
Yeah, keep empowering these people who turn a blind eye to what the courts do. You know what Alito was doing in that dissent. That is what we call activist judging. When you've got established rules and laws put in place by Congress, and you get an activist judge who turns around and says, "I don't care what Congress thinks."
Well, he couldn't be an activist judge. Isn't that the things that Republicans loathe the most?
Yeah, and you can only be an activist judge if you're like a Democrat and you think that somebody's body belongs to the you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Hey, Wayne, let me roll on here real quick. I got a couple more calls I want to hit.
All
thanks,
right, buddy.
Thanks so much. And it was so cool to hear the old Serb talk to the young Turk.
Okay, I don't know if they knew. I should have told them, but maybe they wouldn't have let me on.
Later on, Wayne. See ya. And line one, Rick in Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm getting better by the minute.
I missed most of the show. I came in late. I've only been listening since about 5 after, but the last hour here. But it sounds like you're getting a head of steam behind you.
I want to fight these bastards, to be quite frankly.
Wasn't it amazing? I have a couple of observations.
Okay.
First off, I've thought this for some time, but I just thought I'd share it with somebody that has a high amount of intelligence and obviously, you know, riveted pretty close to sanity, like yourself.
Oh, I was going to say, did you mean to be dialing Sam Cedar at the Majority Report?
Well, no, seriously, I mean, I thought this for a while, and, you know, I have a tendency to think a little bit on the conspiratorial side, unfortunately, but these days, how can you not? I mean, just...
Right.
Just because you're paranoid, it does not mean that people are not following you.
Paranoia, clinically defined, paranoia is the irrational fear that people are out to get you. If the guy is facing you with a gun, you're not paranoid.
That's my belief on it as well.
Yeah.
Here's the first observation. I believe that it should be obvious to anybody that has watched these Alito fiascos, this dog and pony show, is that we have basically been good cop, bad cop, and that what's been going on here is that we're in the middle of this Truman Show type process that's going on, and everyone's in on it except us, we the people.
And no, wait, Rick, we're in on it. We're the marks.
Well, we're the marks, but what I'm saying is aware. I should say aware.
Yeah.
Of what's going on around us, because what I saw today, and with these key players. Now, I always knew that Rockefeller was a terrible, terrible person, and that, you know, his alignment with that, who is it, Roberts, was suspect right from the very beginning as far as for that, who is it, the senator with the 9/11 situation and all that. Was that Roberts?
Pat Roberts, Kansas, crazy old dude.
Yeah, his alignment with him was always, you know, more than suspect and suggested that he was playing on the other side and he's just, incognito. And all the others. I mean, again, it's not as obvious as a person like Lieberman to Capo. I mean, the rest of them, they would actually lull you in, such as Byrd and others, to believing that, or you know, who was it again, Dorgan today that...
Dorgan sold out.
I mean, this was unheard of. And again, if they're not dropping file photos from FedEx overnight saying, okay, here's the pictures, what are you going to do now? If they're not doing that, then what we have here is an actual coup that's being run by our government to completely thwart our Constitution, to set up an emperor-type ship or kingdom, and to totally abolish anything that had to do with amendments or the United States Constitution as a whole. And I just, as a matter of fact, I even came across an article, or it was a news flash or something, because I'm all over the place, internet, TV, radio, everything. And it came from somewhere where... there was something being said about, they actually said George Bush is going to concentrate on his State of the Union on his third term.
Huh?
Third term. That's exactly what it said.
Oh, hell.
And I said to myself, whoops, is that a Freudian slip, a typo, or what are they getting ready to prepare us for? But that's exactly what it said. He prepared.
If you can dredge that up somewhere, I would very much like to...
I'm thinking it was ABC, or no, I don't watch them. It would have to be CNN, MSNBC, or Fox that had that as what they were discussing on a panel. It was a graphic. And it's exactly what it said, preparing for a third term. So something's afoot here, and I think that we've got to come to a realization that we're talking about an absolute in-your-face takeover of this country.
Well, wait a minute, Rick.
Without firing a single shot as of now.
Everybody knows how notoriously bad my math skills are, but I'm just curious. I've got my list of sellout Democrats in front of me here.
Okay.
There are, let's start with the number 55, because that's how many Republicans are. And if George Bush told them to pass a law that said he got to drown kittens every Saturday in front of the White House, they'd do it.
Right.
So that's 55. Now, let's go. The sellout drams 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, 71. It takes 66 senators to amend the Constitution or to repeal an amendment to the Constitution. If you look at the mugwump sellout Democrats who voted for cloture today, that's more than enough to repeal the amendment that creates the two-term presidency.
Absolutely it is. And not only that, if you take a look at the direction the governorships had been going in, that would, I think they'd be in on the process too. Don't they have to approve as well?
Well, the legislatures do. It's two-thirds of the Senate, two-thirds of the House, and two-thirds of the several states.
Right. So, I mean, and that's been a constant progression towards the right wing and the Republicans as a whole. So, I mean, they seem to be holding majorities in most states. And I can just see this coming around full circle. I mean, I don't know what the October surprise is going to be this year, but I'm very concerned of who will get nailed to be able to resurrect this whole 9/11 mentality to its fullest. I mean, it was
But Rick, at least if George Bush got to run for a third term, at least he'd have to run for election.
Well, yeah, that's
comedy moment.
It goes. Yeah, I understand. And what better way to get a sweeping populist vote than to scare all the chickens again? I mean, this is no longer the home of the brave, you have to admit. But it's just the capabilities of it doesn't even require anything anymore. Did you see that article last year in a Cigar Aficionado with Tommy Franks? I think it was General Franks. And he said he stated this, and it's a quote, one more terrorist event and the Constitution will not survive.
I did see that.
Yes, and that was just a forerunner to what we're getting to now. What they seem to be obsessed with, in my opinion, is being able to totally run this coup and take over this nation and put it in this new direction of this kind of kingdomship or emperorship or whatever you want to call it.
It is empire.
Yeah, they want to do this. They're obsessed with doing it within the bounds of the law as perceived by the rest of the world.
Well, bear in mind, Rick, and a lot of people's eyes roll back in their heads when I go down this road, no one ever declared Augustus to be an emperor.
Well, right.
He was merely made consul for life and supreme magistrate and, mother of all leaders. That's all that was.
Adolf Hitler was never elected.
It was just a chancellor.
No, he was never elected. He was actually appointed. He forced the resignation.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
And then he was appointed. And then he turned around and abolished everything else and just started ruling with an iron fist.
Yeah, the special security law or whatever it was called after the Reichstag fire.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, so, but we're going to be in trouble now because we've called George Bush a Nazi.
Well, I mean, if the shoe fits.
Yeah. But that's the truth.
I mean, I don't think they're even running and hiding from it. I think that's my projection for the very near future, that we'll see less hiding from these truths, because the population, the larger, the greater populace, if you want, is agreeing more and more with everything that's going on.
Because the leadership, from the leadership down, the president of the United States establishes the tone for the nation, Rick. We have a coward president, and therefore we have a coward nation.
Well, right. They're more than happy to be able to give up anything for the sake of. I don't even know what they think they're being protected from. Bombs from the sky, or is it something so personal they're afraid to go?
Hey, we're being protected from two dudes picking out a China pattern. Okay, I mean, that's what it is. We're being protected from people who don't want to read the Ten Commandments everywhere. That's, you know, we're being protected from ourselves. Well, hey, Rick, I've got one more call I want to get before the show's over. Thanks so much, and thank you for the great conversation.
Oh, hey, I'm always glad to talk to you and always glad to listen. Great job. We're standing in line. Any day now, you'll go national commercial.
I hope that it'll be nice to get a check.
Yes. And you won't have to chop wood during the day.
That's right. You take care, Rick.
See you later, Bob.
Later. And Peter in Tallahassee. Hey, Peter, you're head on. Thanks for waiting, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, Bob. First, a shout out to my new neighbor in Panama City. Hello, Rick. I'm in Tallahassee, so I guess that makes us about 80 miles apart. I mean, everybody's so far away from me. It's so nice that there's somebody 80 miles away.
Well, you know, we've had, we had Mike in Florida. We had Rick in Panama City. We got you. We got a little Florida thing going on. Benedict at large in Florida. I mean, we got a little Florida thing going on tonight.
Absolutely true, yeah. You know, what he was just saying about the third term, this is absolutely true. John Fox in the chat room has a link to the article at I only read it quickly tonight after it was posted, but I think it had to do with the 22nd Amendment. There is a move afoot to change that, to get rid of it. So presidents, and I wasn't clear, because I read it quickly, to whether or not you could be president forever and be elected again and again, if it was just a third term or what. But yes, there is a move afoot. John's probably still in the room and listening to me. If you'd repost that for Bob, so you could have a copy of it.
I'd love to do that, or I'll agitate with him after the show's over. But Peter, as we contemplate this, do you realize what it would mean if they repealed the 22nd Amendment? I mean, you want to talk about your steel cage chainsaw iron glove death match wrestling, because it is wrestling. We realize that.
Yeah.
You want to talk? Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, George the Defender Bush. And in this corner, coming back for another few licks.
Yeah.
Battling Bill Clinton.
Yes, yes, yes. It would have to go along those lines.
That's the only thing that I think would slow down the freaks.
Well, absolutely.
Because they know that Bill Clinton would come back in and clean George Bush's clock.
Well, yes, he would and could and would have to, because the state of the country is it's unbelievable. You know, you can walk into any store, any restaurant, and you can immediately tell from the manner of the staff as to what the management is like. And
oh yeah,
and what Bush is doing to the country. You've got look what's happened to the mine regulating people. That's completely toothless now.
Yeah, wasn't that great what Wayne said?
Yes, it was perfect. And I love Wayne's call. And, you know, in listening to that call, you know, it makes your mind jump all over the place. There's so many things I wanted to say, but, you know, I love his calls. And then you've got Brownie at FEMA, which completely reverses the, what FEMA's is supposed to do. And, you know, what Bolton has done to the UN is what Alito is going to do to the Corps.
Well, and what's more, I forget who it was. Somebody sent me a link to a story about Wolfie's tenure at the World Bank. The World Bank is almost in a state of almost perpetual stasis or ennui or just inability to move, because Paul Wolfowitz has gone over there and destroyed that too.
Well, yes, that too. You know, in this is Bolton's latest trick. This just found out about this Friday. It was in the New York Times. You know, there's a status in the UN where you have a consulting status, and there's like 3,000 organizations that have consulting status, and all it means is that you can go in the UN and distribute literature and hand out documents to the people when they're going to meetings. You don't have a voice, all you can do is hand out material. Well, Bolton's latest trick was to side with Iran. He joined.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Iran and Cuba and Sudan and Zimbabwe. He sided with these fascist, backward, repressive governments to prevent a couple of gay organizations from being granted consulting status. It was the Danish National.
Yeah,
okay, you're right. And
yeah, it was like, I mean, can you, Michael Bolton with that funky mustache saying, "Well,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
boys, we hate your freaking guts in Iran. We want to bomb you back into the Stone Age, but let's go have a beer and hate the gay people."
The mustache is so gay. It's so oh, please, may Sue lose the mustache. It's got to go. It's horrifying. And, you know, people in the UN were saying things like, you know, it's it's a sickening effort to smother voices and aligning itself with tyrants. And, of course, they said that Bolton's response was that these people are promoting pedophilia. But the the point really isn't, that's what it says. But the point really isn't that it was gay folk. The point is it's reversing the whole purpose of the UN, which is diplomacy and, you know, bringing people's ideas together. And for the United States, how embarrassing is that for us to side with countries like the Sudan and Iran? I mean, you know, this is
our kind of people.
But, yeah.
Well, you know, we offer about the same quality of health care as the Sudan.
Yeah, I guess you're right about that. And the same quality, what is it?
Human rights.
Perception and right.
And we've got a similar infant mortality rate. I mean, you know, there are natural allies.
Well, God, I hate to say it, but you're right. I just hate to say it.
Yeah, I know. Rubber bricks. We got it. We got to work on the rubber bricks, Peter.
Oh, rubber bricks. Oh, God, I wish I had a patent on rubber bricks. But you know, it's just the dumbing down of the country. God, I hate it. But you know, Bob, it's not the end of the world. I'm trying to pull myself together because, you know, all we have to do, and we can do it, assuming he doesn't get a third.